Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Welcome, one and all, to Knife Talk, the number one podcast for knife makers, knife collectors. If you've just got an interest in knives, this is the show to listen to. We're here every Monday morning with myself, Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives, Jeff Fader of Fader Knives, and Mareko Marmassi of Marmassi Fire Arts. Mareko, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. Good, good. Very stormy here today, but I understand it's worse in the US today. But yeah, lots of storms.
Yeah, I just heard some news of some interesting earthquake activity.
Yeah.
But yeah, for me, let's see. I guess I'll start off with my last week. It's been pretty... I feel like we only just talked a couple of days ago.
We did. It does feel like that. Yeah, yeah.
It's because we did.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We did. On Sunday, right? not a lot's been happening since then. Just kind of like holiday stuff and going like holiday shopping and shit like that. And I don't know, just normal shop stuff in the workshop, just normal stuff. I'm trying to finish out the year on a high note for me, which is doing a little bit of cleaning and organizing so I can kind of start the year fresh without so much kind of chaos, I guess, in my shop right now. So trying to just focus on small areas. I think what for me I really struggle with is seeing the whole of the chaos and being so overwhelmed that like I don't do any of it and I just go to my knife work. But I realize that if I can just compartmentalize and just focus on one small area, just like one table at a time or one surface at a time, then I can get shit done. So it's feeling good. I'm feeling accomplished. I'm doing that as well as just like I said, the normal knife stuff. And I'm looking forward to starting the year off fresh.
Nice.
How about you, Craig? Outside of the weather, what else has been going on?
Yeah, well, I'm still here in the UK until Monday. Nothing workshop related, really. We got two shows this weekend. One right up north in North Wales and one back down south. So just practicing for that, really. It's all good. We actually finalized our album today, so we worked out what the running order is and what songs are on it and stuff. So that's going off to print for vinyl. It's probably tomorrow. So that's quite exciting. But
that's fun.
But twiddling my thumbs really for most of this week. Not really much to do. Tomorrow's a long day. Big drive up north for a show. The next 2 days are quite exciting, but it's been a really slow week for me. Slow.
How long before the vinyl's available for people to pick up? Or can we pre-order it now?
No, we're not doing pre-orders. We're just going to wait till we've got them. It's going to be very quick, actually. It's so sort of mid-January they'll be available.
Okay.
Which is quite weird because there's been this big whole thing with vinyl recently where it's taken sort of 3 or 4 months to print. But we're working with a new place that I've just started up. So we're sort of first in line. So we're really excited about that. So that'll be cool. for the few people who have record players. I have one.
Yeah, we have
really.
One.
There we go. Us oldies still have them then.
Yeah, my daughter. Like, yeah, the hands-on tactical experience.
Yeah, to be honest, most bands are selling it now really as sort of merch as opposed to just music, you know?
Sure.
Because people want to sort of collect them and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it makes a lot of sense. But they're not cheap. Jeez, you know when you consider you can go on Spotify and hear something for free, you know, then having to spend sort of £30 on a vinyl, yeah, not cheap. Yeah. But yeah, it's all good fun. All good fun.
You know, this is knife talk because when Mareko said, he said the tactical. He said tactical instead of...
Ah, now we're, there we go. Now, that's a rough link there.
That's how make sure we're back in the knife talk because, you know, you did a right. You did a good job.
And when I say cut a record as well, you know.
Yeah,
cut,
yeah, no, no.
We're getting there. It's very loose, but it's there.
It's there. We have to keep the, you know, make sure that they know that we're still with them.
Use the proper nomenclature. They also press those things, right?
They press them, yes.
It's so cool. I found a video and I showed the kid. It's really interesting to watch them press and cut them.
Yeah, especially when they use all the mad colors now and the sparkles and the marbling effects and stuff. It looks really cool, yeah.
If we do an after, we have time for an after show. Did you see Yacht Rock, the documentary Yacht Rock?
No.
It's all, we'll talk about it later. We've got a lot to get to, but there was something pretty funny about it at the end. Well, we can maybe if we hit the after show, we'll talk about it.
A bunch of rich white dudes in polos, coke the fuck out.
No. We need a little bit more time to kind of flesh it out.
I got you.
Well, I got a. We finished our first sale and we sent everything out and everything went to Canada. We use UPS. We got everything squared away. Everything that was ordered throughout the sale, we had a huge crush. Throughout the whole thing, everything went out. We're really happy about it. Now we're doing another kind of sale for something else, and that's really cool. We're doing, and then when this comes out, we're doing a new collaboration that we started with this chef down in New York City, and he gave us some of the pecan wood that he uses for his smoking his meat. And then we made handle. Who's giggling? Who's giggling, you little fucking...
It was Mareko.
No, it was you, you little bastard. So we're working on that, and then I got an email, a message from my business partner, Tony, and he sent me this article, and I thought it'd be interesting to read to you guys, and then it kind of bookends into something else. So this is from today. The Today Show. It says, after a rise in stabbings, a company develops kitchen knives with blunt tips. And then the article goes, some kitchen knives have been classified as offensive weapons in the UK. This cutlery company found a solution. Amid a rapid rise in knife-related crimes, Viner's Cutlery has discovered a way to keep the kitchen knives and hopefully the streets a little safer with a new knife. This week, the Assure range, it's called Assure, the Assure range made its debut on the company's website. It features six different knives ranging from 8 inches to a classic bread knife. Unlike many of the knives on the market, these sleek stainless steel knives feature a non-stick coating to reduce cutting friction. And then it goes on to say, that's the end of the fucking article. Thank you, Today Show.
So the coating is for cutting friction, right? Okay.
Or people, I don't know. But it was all about how it was just an article about how these companies are now starting to. Continue reading. Okay, never mind. I think I got it. The blunt tip knife is a blunt tip knife really necessary if you live in the UK? Maybe. In May 2019, the government passed an offensive weapons act that made it illegal for citizens to possess dangerous weapons in private. Dangerous weapons in private, many of which include various types of knives that could be used for violent actions. The act was enforced to deterrent to the climbing knife-related crimes, which peaked at a record high of 44,000 incidents in June 2019, up from 4,100 in June 2018. As a result, kitchen knives became classified as offensive weapons and previously sold as a single unit, not a set, but were removed from floors of many retail stores. But anyone who's been suffering the plight of avocado hand knows how important it is to have a nice, high-quality chef knife to avoid serious damage, which is stupid, by the way. The solution, So it's this company has the Offensive Weapons Act. Viner's Assure Collection was born. According to the company, it's impossible to pierce the skin with these knives, and they supposedly underwent rigorous testing. The knives range in price from $4.55 to $18.90, which puts them at the lower end of the spectrum when it comes to culinary knives.
Looking at the picture of them now, they basically look like santokus. So if you'd imagine a normal chef knife, but they've taken that tip off, basically, you know? Yeah, it's just marketing speaking it, really. Do you know what I mean? It's like they mentioned here, like in the UK, they've gone from 44,000 incidents up from 41,000, 4 years ago. Barely anything with regards to, you know, a massive uptake in knife crime. It hasn't.
That's a lot of knife crime, though. 44,000
incidents to 44,000 in 6 years isn't like a massive uptake,
but
is it?
41,000 is a lot.
It is a lot, but I mean, what are they classing as a knife crime? There, you know.
That's a different situation.
I've seen to take it away from knives again a second. I've seen this trend of particularly sort of US media, like really sort of slagging off the UK, saying it's really bad there. It's really bad then. It's like nothing is really different to what it was 10 years ago. But I just think, I don't know. It's almost as if, like, don't look at what we're doing over here. Look how bad it is over there, kind of thing, you know?
I mean, now we're getting into an interesting conversation, because I was, you know, we had talked about the fact that the Royal Post deemed certain things illegal to send, right?
Royal Mail, yes. Yeah.
Royal Mail. So it's like, it's not nothing.
Yeah, it's not nothing, but it's completely being sort of blown out of the water how bad crime is and all the rest of it. It always has been, you know.
Okay.
I'm not saying there's no crime. It always has been, but I don't know. I've just noticed, like, Elon Musk in particular piping up a lot, and you just think, just look after yourselves, you know. You know, you got your own problems. There's no good pointing fingers. That's sort of, I suppose I'm being a bit defensive, but
that's fine.
I think it's fair, because I think news media outlets, they make a lot more, or they get more draw when they're scaring people.
True. You're right.
So they're always going to report all the negative shit. Yeah, all
over the company. But this company designed knives.
How do you spell that company's name?
V-I-N-E-R-S.
V-I-N-E-R-S. Yeah.
The article is in the show notes to the top.
Oh, it is. Okay, sorry.
So it's, it's great. It's great clickbait for them, the company, because it's just like all of a sudden it's more of an interesting story. I mean, they're cheap as shit knives, $5 knives. I mean, get the fuck out of here. I mean, we're talking, you know, once again, slow boat knives. You know what I'm saying? It's
yeah.
You know, this isn't like, all right. So here's what this kind of bumps me. Do you have anything to add, Breco? Because I'm going to hit on to the second end.
Well, and I think it wasn't clear. It does kind of look like a santoku, but if you look, like, if anybody's ever seen like a brisket slicing knife or something like that used for barbecue, it basically looks like a short version of one of those, because those knives are usually like 12, sometimes 14 inches long. These are like 6 or 7 inch long, little slicers, basically.
So it's like a sandwich knife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost like a sandwich spatula or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So this morning, I found this Instagram post from our friend Jamie Oliver, and I wanted to play it. I thought it was, and I'm gonna.
Telling us that we've never cooked less.
Wait. All right. So hold it. Okay.
5 years in the business, slightly depressing, brother. The basket data of Britain is telling us that we've never cooked less than now.
Really?
From scratch.
Is that true?
Post-COVID, like, we had that high in COVID. I think everyone forgot we were locked down. But actually, it's not looking great. So, look, I believe we can come out of it. But for me, it's just keeping cooking skills alive. So I've just kind of used everything that I've learned to make the ultimate cookbook, the ultimate simple cookbook, 5 chapters, you know, sort of.
All right, so he's got a cookbook. But the whole idea, this whole post was about, like, you know, what's going on? You know, it's almost like a question. I know that Jamie Oliver has been talking a lot about a lot about the fact that, you know, a lot of school food for years has been really bad for the people of the UK and stuff like that. So do you guys have phones?
Yes.
Find that. You can put your volume down and go to that article. And then on Full Blast Podcast, I wrote a question on that post. And I'll read you the question I wrote. And I got depressed because, like, I got fucking scalded. They scalded me, those motherfuckers. Mm. So let me get back to so basically, I posted a question on Full Blast Pod on that particular. I gotta find it. Hold on a second. On that article saying,
"Oh, I see it." Yeah, all UK right. laws and how they categorize culinary knives as weapons factor in at all.
I asked a question. I asked the question, and the question I asked, was, is it possible that have we thought about the fact that is it possible? Well, here, I'll read exactly what I wrote. UK laws and how they categorize culinary knives as a weapon, does that factor in at all? I might have been a little clumsy. It was 5 o'clock in the morning. I got excoriated.
On the Full Blast Podcast Instagram?
No, if you find the Jamie Oliver thing, I write on the Jamie Oliver, I asked a question. I said, do you think that the UK knife laws, because we know as knife makers, we hear about it all the time, you can't send knives in the mail. You can't put them in the mail. You can't buy them off Amazon unless you're 18 years old. There's all these like rules and regulations. And
all you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Wonder if that is there any possibility that there could be any contributing to his depression of the fact that people aren't in the UK aren't cooking as much as they used to. Is it possible? And I got excoriated.
I personally think there's been this proliferation of delivery, you know, Uber Eats, Just Eat, and all these things. And if you in the UK, if you turn on the TV, that's all you see, just adverts for food delivery companies. You know, you open up the app, you'll have food here in 20 minutes. And it's cheap as well. It is cheap. So you can see how when people are sort of pinching pennies, how getting food, you know, shit food delivered is actually cheaper than going out and buying good, wholesome food and cooking themselves. I can see how, yeah, that can change people's habits very, very quickly. And I've noticed just, you know, I come back to the UK a lot, but I've noticed over the last year or so this proliferation of these companies delivering food. And I think that's probably the main contributor, I'd say.
Well, you like to eat all that shit, too.
I do. I complain not all the time, but I
well, you love
do.
A McDonald's. Yeah, yeah. You're a big McDonald's man.
I do.
But you also cook.
Exactly. And funny enough, we were talking about, I'm at my sister's at the moment. This is where I'm staying now. I'm in the UK. And so I cooked a meal for the family here tonight. And we were saying how, so she's got a son and he's, what, 18, 19 now, Max. And he doesn't cook at all. You know, she said, if he's left on his own, he'd just get food delivered all the time. And I said, well, he's not just missing out on having sort of nutritious food. He's missing out on the joy of cooking as well. And, you know, the excitement you can get from cooking. And I think there's, I wouldn't say a generation of kids, but I think there's a big swathe of people who miss out. They don't see cooking as something that's good. They see it as just, oh, I need to cook.
Rather drudgery. Than take,
drudgery instead of joy. You know, and to me, cooking is a massive joy. And when I'm back home, my wife and I, we'll often, you know, we're the ones who want to cook. We're like, oh, I cooked tonight. Oh, well, you cooked yesterday kind of thing, you know, and we take it in turns. But yeah, I think people aren't aware of the sort of joy that you can get from cooking.
Hmm. Yeah, but I also think that there's different strokes for different folks, and I think in the world we live in today, we're so driven. I feel like there are a lot of people out there who are not driven to come together for meals anymore. And I think for those people, they don't grow up in those experiences where coming together as a family or friends to have food and share quality time isn't a thing. And so, yeah, to them, cooking might be like fucking folding the laundry or weeding the garden. Like, why the fuck would they go do that when they can just hire somebody to do it for them?
Yeah. I mean, my dad is a prime example of never cooks, never wants to cook. And if he could just take a pill each day, that'd be all the nutrients he needs. He would.
He even hates eating.
He does. He doesn't take any joy in eating at all. And I just find that so alien. So alien. And yeah, there must be others out there like that. I just find it so weird.
My high school friend told me that when he and his wife, he cooks everything, is what he said, the same thing, is as if his wife could just take a pill instead of eating, he would. Mm. You know. But I just wanted to, I wanted you to know how excoriated I got for just,
I'm reading them now.
Read a couple. And basically, I wasn't trying to be a fucking, I was asking a question. Maybe it wasn't as clear as could be. But I got fucking, don't you think I got excoriated? Read a couple of them.
It is pretty ruthless. There's a lot on here. Yeah. Yeah. Let's have a look. Let's find some.
One guy said, Nutty667 wrote, not really, you can buy kitchen knives in any big supermarket. I thought that wasn't the case.
I'm just reading now. I mean, some people are saying that if you take ID, you can now buy them from the shops. You can buy them online, but they use some sort of facial recognition system. ID system.
But like, I mean, but that's weird. See, once again, I mean, they're all pissed off at me, which is fine. But it's like, if you're not making it easier for people to get culinary knives, and I'm not saying about special ones, and what did it say?
You don't need a specialist knife to cook
One guy who says, not entirely true. Supermarkets won't sell them online, but artisan knife makers like Blenheim Forge do. Not everyone's buying Blenheim knives, you know? People are buying those fucking cheap ones for $5 or $6. I think that's the issue that they're getting. One fucking asshole. And I just want to go on record that Simon Vision 70, who wrote ridiculous argument. It wasn't an argument, but you look at his profile, this motherfucker right here. This motherfucker looks like the guy who's going to roofie you. The last thing you see, thing you see at a fucking party is that motherfucker with his terrible shirt looking down at you and telling me it's a ridiculous argument. You know, fuck that guy. Ridiculous argument.
I do think the press have blown out of proportion. You can go into stores and buy a knife. It's never a problem. If you wanted to cook, it's not as if you're like, oh, where the fuck am I going to buy a knife? It's not a problem. You know, IKEA, for example, they're everywhere. You buy them there, you know. It's all clickbait, really. But it is, going back to sort of Jamie's thing, it is a problem where not enough people are cooking and, you know, kids aren't having, you know, good food. Again, on the news tonight here in the UK. So have you heard about these injections that people are taking so they can lose weight?
Oh, Ozempic.
That's the one, yes, yeah.
So then now... Go ahead.
They're now talking about giving this on the NHS, which is like the National Health Service, which is free.
Crazy.
And they're saying the argument for that is, well, people will be less obese and they're less likely to have other problems, which would cost the NHS money.
It's not just that, though. Because my wife has been going to all these conferences, and Ozempic is becoming a lot more of a health benefit for other things other than weight loss. You know, Ozempic was meant to be for diabetes.
Yeah.
But there's also people who are on Ozempic have lower cholesterol and they have lower... The health benefits of Ozempic are becoming so high that people are suggesting using it as a, you know, like something to prescribe people. It's not just for losing weight. But the funny thing about Ozempic and all these fucking things is you can start to see people's faces and you can tell who has on Ozempic because they lose a shit ton of weight really fast and their face is super duper gaunt.
Really?
You know, it's like, you know, these motherfuckers, I know five or so people that never fucking stepped foot outside their door in a pair of sneakers. And all of a sudden now they've all lost a shit ton of weight at a very, very quick pace But yeah, Ozempic is becoming one of those things that it's not just like a weight loss diet thing, but it's also, there are a lot of health benefits apparently.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It can't be healthy though.
Surely. Well, it originally was for as a diabetes medication.
Yeah.
And so then, chemical, but like.
Chemical imbalance of the brain though, isn't it? That's sort of.
Well, I don't, I can't, I'm not, knives. This is knife talk, not med talk. So I don't know enough.
Shall we
about,
talk knives? Shall we talk about
I
knives?
I know we're talking about knives. This is the, you know, goddamn you.
Okay, let's have a look. What have we got? Should we do a couple of questions?
Let's do it.
Okay. If you've got a question, we are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. Send them through to us. DM them. And we'll add them to our list. And Scott Porter has done exactly that. He says, what's up, fellas? I have a question about pre-orders and your experience with them. Do you all take money up front or half? Also, what happens if your minimum doesn't fill? Do you just cancel the whole thing? He says, anyway, cheers, boys. So that was Scott Porter. Good question.
Great question.
Jeff, should we start with you? Should we start with you?
Yes. When we did pre-orders, I stopped doing pre-orders just because I didn't like the wait time. But we would, what we would do was we would do pre-orders for a certain amount of, the best way we found to do it was we would do a pre-order window of a certain amount of time, and then we'd make them after that certain amount of time. So like 3 weeks, and then once it's done, we make what we have, what is ordered, and maybe we'll throw five more on. Yeah. And then that way, that's a pretty easy way to do a pre-order where you don't feel as though you're doing too much. But then in regards to, we used to take deposits, but then it became such a fucking hassle hunting people down that we were like, you got to buy it up front. And then my reputation is just like, you're going to get it. And then whether fucking hook or by crook, don't worry about that. So we don't, I don't do that. Deposits can be a problematic if you got to hunt people down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about the sort of the benefits of pre-order, why people do it. So an example of a pre-order is people pay upfront. You can then get your materials. You know how much you need to get, and you can develop a system that way. I found it difficult with pre-orders because, you get paid upfront, which is nice. You get all the materials. You can do all that. But then it feels like you're working for free after that, you know.
That's a mindset you got to change.
It's completely a mind thing, without a doubt. You know, whereas... You know, the normal way of doing it is to make something and then sell it. You've got to be in the right mind state to do it. And I know less and less people seem to be doing pre-orders now. But Marekka, what are your thoughts on them?
Yeah, I think if you're going to do pre-orders, and I would try, if you can afford to not take deposits, I think that would, or at least from my perspective and what I've done in the past when I did, took custom orders as I was taking deposits. But if I could go back, I would probably try to operate without taking deposits as much as possible, unless it's just like something completely outrageous, or wait to take the deposit when I'm getting ready to actually physically start the build rather than taking it and then sitting on a deposit for a certain amount of time. Because like Jeff was saying, like, it's hard to chase people down to follow up and finish up stuff or so it's a good way to like get somebody on the list. And then when you're getting ready to start basically checking back in with them, like, yo, your order's coming up. I'm going to start working on it. That means I need this much down to cover the cost of materials. And that kind of checks back in with the customer to make sure they're still on board and that you're in actual physical or like actual communication with them before you start doing the work, instead of just doing all the work and then the people just fucking ghosting you, which definitely happens. When it comes to pre-orders, though, I'd be curious to know. I feel like if I were to do like a, say I was going to get blades cut and heat treated and I'm doing the grinding and handle assembly and sculpting work. I would probably try my best to keep that batch as small as possible so that one, it's not a ton of money out the pocket, right off the get, but, also that, so that, I'm not having to stress out about getting 50, 60 or 100, I don't know, like big numbers, of pre-orders sold and just work in small batches and then kind of just cycle through those more frequently rather than doing infrequent large batches. But I would be curious what you guys' take. I think you guys have done more production stuff in that way than I have, and I'd be curious. And I know that Jeff has done big numbers of like batch stuff in 50s, but also often works in like 10s or 20s. And so, yeah, I'd be curious what you guys' take is.
I don't get you. All this stuff, like what Craig was saying and kind of what Marek was saying, the same thing, is like there's a lot of mindset you have to change. And one of those is like, if you get money up front, you can't be like, oh, now it's just downhill all the way to depression. You got to get past that. You've created something, you've gotten the money, and then you're going to take care of somebody, and then you're also building a relationship with that customer. I don't like the pre-orders anymore because I don't want people waiting when they buy. Like I told you this before, I'm still on the hook with a guy who I know and I love, and he's fucking late big time. And it's just like, if I didn't know him, I would have forgotten about it already, or I would have been irritated. So like, we're done that. Like, even when I said to Tony, I'm like, yeah, we could do this if you want to do a pre-order. He's like, we're not doing pre-orders anymore. He's like, that's it. And I want to be able to get somebody out the door. In regards to the being overwhelmed, you're also, as a fabricator, you got to think about yourself as a fabricator sometimes. Like, all these artsy words is nice and everything like that. But in your business and your fabricator, you also have to get your mind right that you're not going to get overwhelmed. Like, you're just going to fucking do what you said you're going to do, and you do it. And that, to me, has been the hardest thing, but it's taken time to get there. And before I made knives, I did production. Out of spite, I did this whole 66 identically carved and painted sculptures. Identically. As identical as you can do, And it was meant to kind of push me to the point where, can I do this? And it was like super duper. It made life so. That was harder than making knives, frankly. And I think that a lot of it is repetition and also kind of conditioning yourself to know that you can do it. And then you create kind of like a callus to these anxieties, because you can't grow if you're too afraid. And that's the biggest problem. You got to take a risk.
Yeah. I can see how Jeff, you work with chefs and you do like a limited run of that, of chef signature, for example. I can see how pre-orders would sort of work there, because you can sort of gauge interest, I suppose. But yeah, I mean, there's many ways to skin a cat, I suppose.
But
yeah.
And also in our situation now, I mean, we're doing with the chefs now, we're doing five to 10 maximum. And part of it's because some things aren't resonating with people. And then also some of my collaborators are not really fucking moving their asses. Yeah. So it's like, I'm less likely to do, a giant amount, because I don't have confidence in the person to move to do their end of the bargain. So now we're doing 5-10 maximum, but at the same time, it's like we're trying to gauge what we think this fucking our collaborator is going to help us do. And then in the meantime, we're doing our own thing too. So it's nice and everything like that, but at the same time, like, I'm also, when I get like bit too hard by one guy, the next guy gets less. So, but we're not doing pre-orders, and we're done with that. Actually, I want them, when they sell, they're out the door. I want them out the door and on to the next.
I'd be curious what you guys think about the idea of maybe, because just kind of going back to the point that Craig was bringing up about how if you take the pre-order, it feels like you're already paid, and then it feels like you're working for free. And like Jeff said, and both of you guys actually said, it does, I think it requires maybe a little bit of a mind shift. But I wonder too if it maybe would make sense for that money to go into some sort of like an escrow account of some sort, where it's just sitting there. It's not yours yet, and it sits there. It pays for materials and all that stuff, but it's still not yours until the fucking job's done. And that way, you're kind of playing a mental game with yourself, where you are finally, once the job's done, you are getting that money. But until then, that money's still not yours.
Seems like a lot of work.
It's an escrow account. Instead of putting it into your business account, you put it into a separate account.
Well, then you got to do that. I mean, it's like I just.
It's like 2 minutes.
I'm just
trying to figure out workarounds for people who struggle with that, because I struggle with that myself.
All right. Well, I'm telling you, I don't think that. I mean, I think it's just a question of like getting your mind right to, if that's what you need to do, then that's a good idea. But like, you know, the more you do it, the more you're comfortable with the fact that you're, you know, it's not like, you know, you finish the job and then now it's time to put your feet up and sit at the lake for the next month. I mean, you're on to, you're, you know, when we finish one thing, we're like, we've finished these five knives that are going to go out next week. We've been sitting, we haven't been working on 10 other things at the same time. It's like we're constantly rotating through jobs. And I see it like a fabrication shop. I don't see it like this. Each product is some sort of, you know, prize to win at the end. It's like on to the next. Let's go. And, you know, when we stop, it's over.
I think what's difficult too, though, I think a lot of people haven't worked in that kind of a production environment.
Right.
Very few people have.
Right.
And so I feel what's difficult in translating what you're saying is that people just don't have that experience.
Boom.
And so you say that over and over again, and people are like, cool, I kind of like intellectually, I get what you're saying.
Dude.
But my experience tells me that I don't know what the fuck you're saying.
That's fucking, you're a million, trillion times right. I say experience is underrated all the time because I make jokes about the fact that half the people, they've never worked in a shop before. They don't understand the expectations of being in business. They don't understand the expectations of how things really work. And they're like having these struggles. And I'm not saying that our man here is in that, but it's just the conversation.
Yeah.
I'm about to be 51. I've been through a lot of this shit. And we, some things work, some things don't. I don't have all the answers. I know it works for us. And sometimes it's like, sometimes this isn't for everybody.
I see. It's like somebody opening a restaurant and they don't know how to fucking cook. And they're writing,
or they've never run a restaurant before.
They've never run a restaurant. Sure,
you know, there's a lot of discipline is a thing. It's like, you know, we can kind of talk around it all the time, but it's like that's the hardest. And I'm not trying to be like some tough guy. I'm saying the fact remains that there, you know, it's hard. It's hard being in business. It's hard figuring out what's going to work for you. But at the same time, it's just like some of these things. You know, we kind of pussyfoot around certain things and, you know, very kind and nice and stuff like that. But it may not be for everybody.
Yeah.
I got a question for you, Jeff, in regards to the collaborations you do with the chefs. Have you ever had one just not get any traction?
Yeah.
And then what happens? Because I know that you spend like a bit of work with the chef coming up with a design, you're doing the painting, you're mocking up all this stuff. And that kind of like maybe that first one, that prototype or that proof of concept becomes the chef's knife. But if it doesn't pick up and take off or gain any traction, what happens to that knife? Does that knife still go to the chef and it's just like written off as marketing budget?
No, I mean, it's still on the website. I mean, if it doesn't go, it doesn't go. You know, you have to just kind of understand that the crazy thing about business in general is sometimes things just don't work. And we have to be understanding. And the crazy part about our knife makers, our loving listeners that we love and we're supportive and we thank them, is everybody feels as though whatever decision they make, it has to equal money. And experience, they don't believe that experience is good enough. And they want to make a decision. They want to do something, but they're just too afraid to lose a nickel. And that is like the worst. It's easy for me to say, but like we've done things that just don't work. And it just doesn't work. And you have to just say, okay, well, then we're not going to do that shit again. You know, and it's like, okay, we've learned. And it's like, and that's part of the experience of being understanding. I think people they're too afraid to make risks, and they get afraid of these kind of decisions. And unfortunately, making mistakes is fucking awesome because like, at least you get some sort of, you know, you get, hopefully it's not too financially devastating, but you know, sometimes you lose and you know, it's like, okay, hopefully you win more than you lose.
Yeah.
No.
Okay, well,
I think that's probably one of the big things that hold people back is that financial.
Yeah.
The financial bit.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I hear stuff from people and I'll tell you a funny thing is some knife maker was saying that like they were giving all these, they were kind of talking very toughly to their customers. It's like, this is the way it works and this is how you do it. And I don't make any exclamations and there are no exceptions. And if you can't do it like this, then you can't do business with me. And it's all this like fear. It's all this fear of being screwed. And it's not about, like, here, perfect example. We just did this big sale. Obviously, you know, we sell a ton of knives. Something's going to happen. You know, there's the law of averages. I get a message from a guy, perfectly nice guy. He hasn't even received the knife. It's in the mail. Box hasn't arrived. Something happened. He says, I'm really, really sorry. Something came up, and I really need to have some cash. And I was wondering if I haven't even gotten the box yet. Can I just send it back to you and get a refund? And I'll charge, you know, you charge me a restocking fee or whatever. He hadn't even gotten it yet. And I'm like, yeah, send it back. I'll charge you less the shipping. But I'm not going to make a thing about it. You know, that's the cost of doing business. Mm-hmm. It's like sometimes you lose. And is it the end of the world? No. I mean, it isn't a cake. You know, it isn't like I had to throw it in the garbage. It's like, you know, we'll just put it back on the website and, you know, lesson. I mean, I don't know if it's a lesson learned. It's the fact that we're lucky that we can pay it back. Yeah. You know, but, you know, sometimes you lose.
There's the title. Sometimes
you gotta know when to hold them.
Whoa, that's something else again. You know how you don't lose, Craig?
Tell us how.
You gotta even heat. Because, hey, ladies and gentlemen, go to evenheat-kiln.com. You know why? Because if you gotta get it hard, you better use an even heat. You know what I'm saying, baby? Go get yourself a kiln and stop playing Kill the Doubt. Get yourself one of them tap controls. Get some of them solid-state drives. Get one of them LB series. There's no coils in the back. Get one of them temper ovens. Go to evenheat-kiln.com.
There we go. And do you know what? If you can harden some knives, you can need some abrasives too.
Yeah, baby.
Head on over to combatabrasives.com. Yeah. Every kind of abrasive you could possibly need. And what's even better, we can get you 15% off if you use Knife Talk 15 at checkout. combatabrasives.com.
Have mercy.
Who wants to take Masonic Blades?
Recco, question. I want you to read this next one, please.
Okay, this one's from Masonic Blades. He says, love the podcast, very sneezy, with the laughy face emoji next to it. Quick question. How can a new bladesmith connect with other knife makers without coming off as pushy? Thanks again. What do you guys think?
Is this like a dated question? Is it now a dating app for knife makers?
Don't tell them you love them right away.
No,
don't tell him you want to get married.
Masonic right? Blades has he has written in the past. Things are. I like what you're doing. It's very sneezy. I think sneezy is some like Generation Z expression. I'm not a fan. Here's what you, number one. Here's what you know. How a new because he's done this to me now. Oh, I love what you're doing. It's so sneezy. Well, fucking sneaky. Just talk like a normal person. That would be number one. That would be what I would say. I would be like, you know what? I'm with you, Masonic Blades. Just talk normal. That's what I would say.
Yeah. I would say if you can meet people face to face, that really helps.
I show up in their shop.
Don't show up to their shop. Meet them in. Go to knife shows. Go to hammer-ins. Engage with them on their posts. So
be supportive.
Be supportive and engage with them in a positive way. Don't like make a bunch of dick jokes on their posts about their knives that they have for sale or something like that. You know, make like just become familiar to them, and then it's a good way to get into the slide on into the DMs after that if you got questions.
Yeah, baby.
But it's like, I mean, that's Jeff's move, right? With the chefs,
what's
like,
my
slowly,
move?
Slowly interacting. Flirting, and then boom, you're in bed.
Well,
you start making knives for the people.
Not really, but I've some of the chefs I've organically become friendly with.
Yeah,
and then we work something out, and then the public relations people get me in touch with the other people, and they do the all slipping in the DMs. I don't slip in the DMs anymore.
Yeah, so. flirt a little bit. Foreplay.
I would say,
don't just start sending dick pics.
I would say that's the thing. It's like, you know, when Craig said, what is this, a dating app? I don't think you could force a friendship on someone.
No.
We have listeners who are trying to force friendships on us, and it's weird. It's literally like, I am not your girlfriend. You know, fucking, you are not that fucking guy from the fucking, you know, the guy looks like, you know, roofie someone with an upside down pineapple situation. You know what I'm saying? I'm not about it. So just be cool. Just be normal. And then hopefully something organically works out.
And I think don't ask too much of somebody as well. Oh, so if you're reaching out to somebody, don't go immediately asking a million and one questions. you know, because I could just be like, oh Jesus, they just need stuff from me. That's what you sometimes feel.
Oh.
I just think, you know, just be civil, be gentle.
No, you know what drives people crazy is when you post something and someone says, oh, I really want to do that. How do you do it? Or I really love that. I'm trying to do that too. Do you think you could tell me how you did it? That's definitely one of them things. That's not sneezy, my guy. It ain't fucking sneezy at all.
Could you make me a video?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. What's your starting stock? What's your starting stock?
What's your starting stock?
How did you do that? You got to tell me how you did that. Or I'm going to steal that. Don't fucking write, I'm going to steal that. I get that shit all the time. Oh, man, that's really good. I'm going to steal that. It's not endearing. It's not endearing. It's not funny. And I got nothing more to say than that is fucking super duper not endearing. Yeah. So just be normal.
You take the next one, Jeff, from Robert Pierce.
All right. Robert Pierce says, Hollow Grind Talk. I recently listened back to an episode from last May of entitled Would You Rather? Where Mareko thoroughly answered a question regarding grinding and the need for delicate, concentrated focus on the tip and the heel. Mm-hmm. Independent of full sweeping grinds, does this same apply to hollow grinds? If you only have an 8-inch wheel, would you limit the height of the blade or climb the bevel up the blade and cheat the radius? I don't even know what to fucking say.
I've never heard cheat the radius.
No.
Yeah. Oh, does that mean like wallow it out?
Fucked if I know. I'm still back to sneezy. I don't have no idea. that's all you, my guy.
Well, for me, I haven't done a ton of hollow grinding, but the few that I have done, I've done kind of like a flat grind to what the thickness of my edge, where I want the thickness of my edge to be, or close to it, maybe just a little above it, because if you're starting at like 36, you want to create some room for or margin for error as you work down or work up through your grits from 36 up to like 400, 600, whatever you're going to. And I won't start at the edge. I'll actually start above the edge, I kind of just grind it in, and if I need to push it up a little higher up towards the spine, I do that. But usually that's a little bit of a twisting motion, really, more than anything, rather than like trying to push the blade in harder or something like that. And if I need to go closer to the cutting edge, then I do the opposite. I twist it so that the edge is pushing towards the wheel a little bit more. But I think I've only kind of quote unquote cheated the hollow once. And that was because I made a Chinese cleaver, Kaidao, and I wanted to put an S grind in it, but I only had the 36 inch radius platen. But the blade was so damn wide that I had to basically grind the 36 inch hollow twice and then kind of wash out the ridge in the middle, or kind of blend out that ridge through the middle. But I think that's what he's referring to as cheating the radius. So creating a deeper radius than what you actually have, or a wider radius than what you actually have available. I think it's possible to do it. I think it's extremely tricky. But that actually used to be, I think, a very common practice for people. But nowadays there are all kinds of different sizes of wheels and radius platens and stuff that you can work with to get your grinds. If that's what you got to do for now until you can get the proper stuff, then that's what you got to do. Just be careful, because you can get through the blade, especially on like an S grind. You might accidentally grind through the blade.
Don't sneeze.
Don't sneeze.
I've just been trying to look up sneezy.
I have too. I can't find it.
And I see nothing.
I think he
must have just made
up
his own thing.
Yeah, it's very sneezy.
Maybe sneezy a thing.
Maybe it's like keep it sleazy, but instead of keep it sleazy, keep it sneezy.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I think we should not. I don't think we should
not encourage this kind of behavior. Well,
no, we should. I think delving might be a little bit more than needed to do. I think it's. Yeah, he's just trying to be fun.
Okay, Mareko, if you wanted a grinder where you could have like a big radial platen, where would you go for that?
I would go to BroadbeckIronworks.com. I love these guys. They're great dudes. They are knife makers who have designed and engineered a grinder for knife makers. It's a it's really kind of the multi-purpose grinder, because you can add flat platen, the contact wheels, you have the flat platen, or sorry, the did I say flat platen? The disc grinder, as well as the flat, and the deep hollow platen that I designed with them. You surface grinder, you can do all kinds of things with this thing. So if you go to Broadback Ironworks, they have a deal going. Is it still going?
No.
When this releases? Okay. So then you just put in Knife Talk 10 at this point and save yourself 10% when you go to BroadbackIronworks.com. So when you're buying any of the packages, the arms, anything you're getting from those guys, just make sure you pump in Knife Talk 10 to save yourself a little cash and give those guys some love and support for being such great dudes and designing a sweet little grinder to use.
Nice. There you go.
Nice. What's GSL, Jeff?
Read the name.
GSL Paul Jansen.
Gold Star Listener.
Okay. Okay.
Gold Star Listener. And don't
you should have put you a gold star emoji
forget it. Paul Jansen, from now on, gets GSL in front of his name. Gold Star Listener. GSL, Gold Star Listener Paul Jansen says, now, if you want to be a Gold Star Listener, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram and start submitting your fucking questions for, hey, man, can I ask you a question? And
beefs.
You guys have been doing a nice job with your beefs. We need more beefs. We're just about almost halfway to where I want it to be. We're doing good. We need more beefs. So go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. And if you submit enough questions that are read, you too will have GSL in front of your name. So Gold Star Listener Paul Jansen asks, I got a question. I recently got a retail deal with a small local store. They're going to buy my knives and then sell them with a slight markup, as well as point people in my direction for customs. How do I go about advertising that my work will be available in a store? I have very few followers on any social media. Almost all my sales are from word of mouth, and this store is in a town of about 1,000 people. Gold Star Listener Paul Jansen's got a question.
Interesting.
Well, he's thought outside the box, hasn't he? He's just sent us the question, so we'll read out his ad for him.
You know, he's a fucking, you know why he's a gold star, don't you? I mean, he's been listening from day one. He's been listening.
Yeah. Yeah, how is he going to reach more people? It's a difficult one, that, isn't it? Let's have a think.
Let's
help Paul out here.
Yeah, I think our buddy Quentin Middleton is a prime model for this. He cruises around and does pop-ups. And if you can go to that store and pop up and either just like, not even necessarily like be making knives, but just be like, Knife Expert is hanging out at the shop. Ask him any questions you got. Or if you can do some sort of, I don't know what. I think really more than anything, doing the pop-ups. What Quentin does is he's got his table and people come by. The store advertises it to their email list. And then he just kind of like hangs out and it's like a half day thing, you know, don't take all day with it.
Or a couple hours
and just, make it really, basically make it like a meet and greet kind of meet the maker kind of thing. Maybe you can coordinate it with them or to have like just like some light hors d'oeuvres or something.
Jesus Christ. They're not going to have light hors d'oeuvres.
You don't fucking know, man. You got to ask. Fucking ask. Because they might have an advertising budget of their own. They'll be like, sure, who gives a shit? Let's buy some cheese and crackers.
Yeah, Paul, ask them what hors d'oeuvres they'll be serving. I fucking dare you. I dare you.
I'm just saying the fucking listener, Paul the pop-up Jansen, thing is a strong
and
move.
I want to know what kind of hors d'oeuvres you're going to be serving at my opening.
Look at Quentin. Quentin's fucking shredding it. And that's what he fucking does. And
he hit him up for hors d'oeuvres?
Make jokes all you want. Fuck yeah, he does. He's fucking smart.
So that's my question for anything now. Somebody says, would you like to do that? I'll say, will there be hors d'oeuvres?
This is probably like if it was like the Ace Hardware store. What are your hors d'oeuvres? I'll give you the lollipop for 5 cents.
All right, the bucket. What genius fucking answer do you have?
I don't have an ingenious answer. I think what you said.
Shut the fuck up.
No, you don't think it's funny? You fucking asking for a little store for hors d'oeuvres?
I do think it's funny, but you're going a little hard to paint now.
What?
Let me lighten the mood and tell everybody all about MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. Belts, steel, handle materials, tools, forges, kilns, and more. If we mention it on the show, Lawrence at Maritime Knife Supply will generally be selling it. Always a deal with 10% off, you know, a 10-pack of belts. Go check him out on Instagram as well, because he's always saying the new stock that he's got in. He has Maritime Knife Supply on Instagram. But yeah, make sure you head over to MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. They've got everything you could possibly need.
And if you could ever meet him in person, he always has light hors d'oeuvres.
Who?
He's got all in his pocket.
He's got snacks.
He fucking, you know what?
He's a snack man.
He does. He gave me some, well, actually, you know what? Fucking Mareko is 100% right. He gave me some
Tim Hortons. It's a strong move.
I mean, it's a move, that's for sure. He gave me a bag of, like, Tim Hortons of instant coffee. It came out of his pocket. Frankly, it was an hors d'oeuvre. He does put candy in the pocket, in the boxes too. But back to the question, and all jokes aside, there's a couple things that one of the things is I do feel is when you're having an arrangement with a store and they're taking a piece of the action, part of it is it's on them to kind of promote it too. Like, I mean, sure. You kind of, I hate the fact
that's why
that,
that's why you do it. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I hate the fact that Paul's worried about, like, he wants to push people to that store. I mean, part of it is like the fact that I love the idea of what Mareko is saying is going to a pop up or something like that. But like at the same time, it's like you're giving them a percentage or you're giving them a wholesale rate. And then all of a sudden now you have to sell the knives. This made me feel like when I was with a gallery and they were like, we're going to give you a show and we're going to take 35, 40%. I don't remember what it was. And the show will be open for 6 days and you got to be here for all 6 days and promote it. And I'm just like, fuck you. I got to give you, I got to sell it. I got to promote it. I have to sell the knives, the sculpture for you. I'm not doing that. I'm like, ugh, I hated it. So part of it is also like, I think it's great that you're doing it. And I think I think it does help when you're there because, I mean, I think they'll make a big deal about it or maybe not, you know, I think it's great to be there for customers or something like that. But like at the same time, it's like, yeah, let them do a little bit of heavy lifting. Let them buy the hors d'oeuvres because Paul Janssen, don't you show up with the fucking hors d'oeuvres. Like you walk in there, Paul Janssen, with a tray of fucking canapes and I'm taking away your gold star listener status. Yeah.
You're the talent.
You're the talent. You don't bring in the fucking hors d'oeuvres, Paul Janssen. Otherwise, you're out from gold star listener.
Nice. Okay. Have we got anything else other than questions this week?
We have a little listener feedback, but I thought you had hard out.
Let's do a bit of feedback. Let's do it.
All right. So, guys, if you want to listen in your feedback, we got a lot of messages in regards to the Australian, the consumer problem of Rhino-et, the fake Rhino-et. A lot of people took a lot of stories about that.
This is Rhino-gate.
I guess it is Rhino-gate. It is. Certainly is Rhino-gate. We're calling it Rhino-gate. Good job. A lot of people were, you know, a lot of people posted about it, and that was good. Our friend Paulus Jankoulis, Jankoukas, Paulus, you got Paulus. You have to send me a message. I think it's Baltic Blades. I think send me how you pronounce your name, especially for this one. And he goes, Paulus might be Gold Star listener too. Your one and only Lithuanian listener reporting in. I've been listening from the exact date when Jeff and Mareko joined and listened to this every week. So much great memories. I am full-time now. This is not Knife Talk's fault directly. You guys just showed that it's possible not to be a factory and live from it. Thanks. We have had messages in the past where I did say I do blame us for people quitting their jobs and becoming knife makers, and we have had a few people who have said yes, it is true.
Yeah, regrets they've had a few.
Now, do you remember we were talking about Brigham Kendall, our man Brigham Kendall, Another gold star. Maybe he's a gold. I don't know if he's a gold star. Really close.
Yeah, he's a gold star. Come on.
I don't know. I mean, we're going to work on it. We're going to see. We're going to start to have a ranking. We're going to start to have a ranking of a gold star listeners. But he was talking about how we were making a lot of jokes about the fact that he actually works in his office wherever he works. And he's hand sanding knives. Yeah. He's working on knives. And we had a good old laugh about the fact that he said that his boss wanted to buy knives from him. Meanwhile, he's got a fucking knife vise clamped to his
in his cubicle,
and he's scrubbing away. And then his boss walks by. Oh, what's that? How much is that? And he's fucking, you know, ripping him. And we were saying, I wonder if he does hand sanding or calls. Well, Brigham has answered. He goes 100% hand sanding while taking calls. They love it, but mainly the handle. And P.S. My boss bought that knife too.
Oh wow!
He might be the smartest motherfucker in this of all the listeners we got. Yeah. He makes knives on the job that he's paid for. This is not a knife making job. No one gives
what
a shit.
What kind of job has he got when he's like?
It is hard to hand stand and talk at the same time.
What are you wearing?
He has
he's
no
a
problem.
Sex worker.
He's not got no problem. Number one. He's figured the whole fucking thing out. Everyone's like, I want to quit my job and I want to be a full-time knife maker. This guy's a full-time knife maker and he hasn't left his job. Yeah. This is like, he's a fucking genius. He's really
salaried. Yeah.
And he's selling the fucking knives to his boss, which is fucking bananas.
I have a you know what you should do to add to his repertoire.
Go ahead.
So his deal was that he keeps giving his boss these discounts, right?
I don't think he is anymore. I think he's fucking jacking him full price.
I think that was the question. Should I give him a discount?
So I think, Brigham, what you got to do is think about whatever discount you think you might give to him. Add that discount to the current price that you actually would like to sell it to. And just be like, hey, I would usually sell this for $695, but I'll sell it to you for whatever,
$600. Wow. That's some fucking dirty.
That's not dirty.
I know somebody when this is all over, I know somebody did that recently and I don't know if I like that. I mean, it's a good idea. I mean, he's got
that
him
way
ball.
He's
I mean,
getting
he's what... got him by the balls. I mean, he can do whatever the fuck he wants in that office, for Christ's sake.
Honestly, I mean, how do you think all these businesses are giving people all these stiff discounts for fucking Black Friday and all that shit?
So you think
it's
that
way
they're
overmarked?
They're
so
they're
like,
overmarked, and then they're bringing
you're getting
it down?
All this discount, but they're still fucking making money. They're still hitting their numbers that they want. And obviously, these big box stores are doing massive volume, but yeah, I think. Discounts potentially should be built into the price in case somebody's like, hey, what about a discount? And you'd be like, sure, great. I'll give you 10%. And you're still getting the number you want.
I understand. I just want everyone to know I have never inflated my price just to put a discount in afterwards. I've never done that.
I haven't either.
So it's like, I mean.
I'm just saying, if that could be a move for somebody.
It is a move for somebody. We'll talk about it after. Show.
Bingo.
I mean, bingo. I know this has happened. So, but at the same time, Brigham, I think Brigham's move now is to ask his boss to put a 220 line in so he can put the fucking even heat in. You know, I mean, might as well heat treat, you know. Yeah. You don't have to bring the, I mean, you can get use the air quench steels. You don't have to, it doesn't have to make noise.
Send off his bills for consumables.
Yeah, he can get his own private office. Corner
no,
office.
No, no, no,
so
no.
So that he can have an isolated grinding room that pumps the dust out the window.
He's having a good time in the cubicle. I say pack that cubicle. You just tell your boss, listen, it's come to our attention, Brigham, that you're doing really good. We want to offer you a raise. Yes, sir, I really appreciate it. I like working here, but you're going to have to do better than a raise. Well, what are we going to have to do? You're going to have a dedicated 220 line put into right underneath my desk so I can fit, and I need my desk to be higher so I can put my ovens underneath the desk. Okay, whatever you say, Brigham. You're our most productive salesperson yet. Yes, thank
Which cubicle is Brigham in? Oh, the one over there with the air scrubber above him.
He's the guy who's breathing heavy.
I want to see a picture of his cubicle with this stuff in there. Because like my head goes to the place where it's like, what if there was like a funky challenge where it's like knife making at work challenge, and like just seeing what people could get away with.
The
at
Moonlighter.
Their actual job.
He's the Moonlighter.
The Moonlighter, yeah.
He's the Moonlighter.
And he
this
just like slowly adds more and more tools and machinery to his cubicle every week
now,
or every month.
Normal jobs would frown upon you doing you a different job at your job. Not where Brigham works. Brigham's boss is buying the shit that he's making on the fucking job. It's madness.
I mean, if Brigham's capable of doing this, I guarantee he probably has coworkers that while they're doing their customer service, they're scrolling through Instagram or watching fucking cat videos.
Wouldn't it be funny if they were? It was like the most side hustle productive office in the world.
He's got them all hand sanded.
You got one person down the way doing crochet, making blankets. You got another person like with a pottery wheel. You got the whole pottery wheel. It's like the most side hustle job of all time. You got a glass blower in the corner. And they're all trying to sell, like, whatever, you know, insurance salespeople. Fuck. What are you doing down there? Oh, I'm making artisanal pillows. Oh, really? I'm also selling life insurance.
Yeah.
I mean, what the fuck?
Love it. Absolutely love it.
Get much better than that.
Right. We need to tell everybody all about Dharma Steel. We've worked with Dharma Steel for a while now. We've done build-alongs with them. We did the Chef Invitational. It's just a stainless Damascus, which looks beautiful, super easy to use. If you head on over to dharmasteel.se, you'll see the beautiful patterns they've got, which they repeat perfectly each time as well. So if you're in a big line, it's easy. Head on over to dharmasteel.se, make something beautiful. And if you use Knife Talk at checkout, I believe you get 10% off your order too. So head on over, dharmasteel.se, and they're also dharmasteelab on Instagram.
Hey, excuse me. Hey, could somebody hit the breaker? Why? Well, I was taking a call here, and then Brigham was drilling some holes, and all of a sudden these fucking steel started flying my way, and then the breaker went off. They have no power to my computer anymore. Why is that? You're
getting steel dust in my power strip.
Yeah, I got. Oh, what happened to my foot? Oh, you got the fucking furl on the bottom. All that drill shit. Oh, you only got 5 more to do. So good.
He's winning at life.
That is seriously winning. Ain't gonna get much better than that. Let's get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, let me do one more question for Mareko from Devin Sheridan. He says, I'm doing a twist Damascus fillet knife. I'm going to be leaving it 3/8 in thickness before grinding. How thick do you guys leave your twist Damascus before you start grinding into it?
Yeah, I think it can vary depending on the size of the knife. But the usually the most interesting stuff, or what, especially when people are doing kind of mosaics and stuff and twisting those, the most interesting stuff is about 30% into that twist bar. So you have to think about essentially losing 30% from each side, which is a drag. But some people are also doing kind of like simpler twist stuff. I've seen some really great simple twist Damascus knives where you're not losing any material. So I think it just depends on how thick you want your finish piece to be. And then based off of that, you basically multiply it by 3. So if you want your fillet knife to be whatever, 1/8 of an inch or less, multiply it by 3. You got your 3/8, like he's saying, grind away that 1/8 off each side and you'll have your interesting Damascus pattern. But I think that, again, it really depends on the style of pattern you're shooting for. There's also usually some sort of schmutz and stuff from the twisting that you want to get below. So you could even potentially just grind enough to get below that stuff and then reduce the material down to flat stock to make your fillet. But if you've got some interesting mosaic that you've twisted, you probably want to go at least 30%, if not more, in from each side. And again, you just got to do the backwards math. Figure out the finish thickness and then multiply it out for the thickness of the bar that you're going to be working from. To figure out how much you need to, or how big it has to be, or thick it has to be. I don't know if that made any sense. Twists are tricky.
Jeff, if you were looking to buy some Indasa, where would you buy it?
Definitely not in Australia. I'm just kidding. I would go to Texas Ferry Supply. Texas Ferry Supply. TexasFerrySupply.com. We got everything you need. If you're a farrier, you're a blacksmith, you're a bladesmith, whatever you need. However you identify, Texas Ferry Supply got your back. Then you got the Indasa Rhino-Wet Redline. Don't fucking play. Get the Indasa USA Redline straight from the source. And you can get it at Texas Ferry Supply. You can also get it at Maritime Knife Supply. And we'll talk about that afterwards. But Indossi USA is the best. Rhino Wet, don't accept any substitutes. I don't fucking play with any weird Xerox-covered sheets. Mm-hmm. Get them from the source. Indossi USA is the best. Rhino Wet is the best. It is the best, period. Texas Ferry Supply. Use Knife Talk 10 for 10% off. And if you're in Australia, go to our boys Gamaco in the Nordic Edge. They have the real stuff. They don't have that Fakakta Rhino Wet.
Right, let's call it a day. We shall speak to you again next week. Bye for now.
Geico makes it easy to get affordable renter's insurance in as little as 90 seconds. That way, you have more energy for harder things, like the laundry. Why is it so difficult to fold clothes? They just end up wrinkly anyway, or on the floor in a pile that just sits there, taunting you. But with renter's insurance through Geico, at least you know that those clothes and the other things you love are covered. Get more with Geico.